Well, again, if you've been, if you're new with us and you're just now joining us, whether online or in the house here, we've been in this series of talks all fall on this whole topic and idea called foreign citizens. It's based on a letter, a very profound letter that was written 2,000 years ago from a man who knew Jesus really well. In fact, he lived with Jesus for over 3 years. So he saw everything that Jesus did, even all the crazy stuff and the weird stuff. And he heard all the things that Jesus heard, all the challenging stuff and all the encouraging stuff. And not only that, but he was a guy whose name was Peter who also saw, had a front row seat into seeing Jesus die right in front of him, which is kind of weird to think about seeing somebody die right in front of you. He saw Jesus' flesh being nailed to wooden beams and saw him die right in front of him and see a Roman soldier pierce him in the side to make sure that he truly was dead. Right there, saw it all. And not only that, but he also had a front row seat a few days later of seeing the same guy that he saw die a few days before right in front of him, risen from the dead. Totally changed his life, as you can imagine. He went from being a guy when Jesus was arrested to turn tail and run to save his own hide, to be afraid of any kind of suffering, even if it means even death, to a guy after he saw Jesus raised from the dead, being willing to lay down his life. In fact, was a guy who also was crucified because of his love and his devotion for Jesus Christ. It's a profound letter that we get to, that has been kept over all these thousands of years for us. Now think about it this way. Think about that if tomorrow, all of a sudden on the news, they come out and they say, we just found, somebody just discovered a letter that was written 2,000 years ago from somebody who actually really did know Jesus. We'd all be like, oh, that's amazing, it's incredible. Well, we already have that. We already have that in this letter from Peter and in other letters as well. But sometimes over years and the kind of the religious stuff that we kind of put on top of these letters and things like that, we forget that these are real letters written by real people who actually really knew Jesus. And so we've taken the time to really dive into one of those letters that one of these guys wrote, particularly the letter that Peter wrote. And it's a phenomenal letter. It really reflects his experience of being there, seeing Jesus, hearing Jesus, seeing Jesus died, seeing Jesus risen from the dead. He writes this letter about 25 years after that seminal experience that he had by witnessing Jesus's death and resurrection. 25 years. And he's writing to a group of people just like you and I in a place in what's now modern Turkey. 25 years later, think about how amazing this Jesus movement and how fast it went just within 25 years without any of the technology that we have. Telephones, plane flights, cars, you name it, none of that. Everything moved a lot slower in antiquity, but within 25 years from Jerusalem or from where Jesus died all the way up to Turkey is phenomenal within 25 years. And so he writes this letter to these guys to encourage them to basically say, now that you find an allegiance to this Jesus, it's a different kind of nation and kingdom that you're living for. It's different. It thinks differently. It acts differently. It thinks differently about God. It thinks differently about other people. It lives life differently. It's very different. You're going to be different. And there's some challenges when it comes to being different. And so Peter writes this letter, and he basically uses the term, you guys are foreigners. In fact, he says it right off the bat here at the beginning of his letter. He says, this letter is from Peter, an apostle, which just means sent out, somebody that God sent out into the world to go proclaim what he himself had actually seen and experienced, the apostle of Jesus Christ. I'm writing to God's chosen people who are living as what? As foreigners. Yep. In the provinces of Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia. Those are just old, they're like old Roman states in what is now modern Turkey. So he writes this letter to all of these people who are like foreigners. Now, he's not talking about people who are like missionaries. Like they left Israel and they went to Turkey and to become missionaries. No, he's talking about people who actually were born there, grew up there, had ancestors from there. And so they are physically and all that from there. But he's saying, you guys are foreigners. And the reason why you're foreigners is because, again, your allegiance has changed. You had an allegiance to this world. You operated by the way this world thought. You conformed to the way and the pressures of the people around you. But now you're different. you're kind of like foreigners. You're foreign to other people because you live differently. You think differently. Your purposes are differently. The meaning of life now to you is totally different than everybody around you. And then he goes on, he says, God the Father knew you and chose you long ago, and his Spirit has made you what? Holy. If you remember, if you've been around here for a while, you know what the word holy means. Holy literally just means being different, okay? A lot of times we kind of have this religious connotation around it by maybe it's the way that you act. Oh, Holy Father, that is what it means to be holy. And we kind of have these weird definitions of this word, or it means holier than thou. It's kind of negative in terminology that you think you're better than other people. And that's not it, and that's not the heart behind this word at all. It just means you're different. God is holy because he's different. He's all powerful. He's almighty. He's perfect. And he's perfectly loving. He's different from us because he loves better than we do. He does things and he loves well better than us. And so what Peter's basically saying is that you guys are going to be different. You're a different kind of people. You're going to love differently. And so God chose you to be different because we all know inside of us there's pieces in our lives that we know we want to be different. You know, we don't want to be anxious and worried and stressed and bitter and upset and fly off the handle and have anger and all of these things. We want to be different. There's part of us inside of us that really want to be different, and so does God. And when we become different the way that God wants us to be different, the more freeing we are. We have more love. We have more peace. We have more joy. We have a better, more clear understanding of what meaning and purpose of life, all of those things are. That's what it means when Peter talks about being different and being foreign. So that's the beginning of his letter. Today, we're actually wrapping up this series. So we're looking at the last three verses of Peter's letter. And in this piece here, you'll see the same kind of bookend themes of his letter here. So he goes on and he writes at the very end of his letter in 1 Peter 5, 12. He says, and we're going to kind of read through these verses here, 12 through 14, then we'll kind of come back to them. He says, I have written and sent this short letter to you with the help of Silas. All right, just remember that name, Silas. We'll come back to him, all right? Whom I commend to you as a faithful brother. My purpose in writing is to encourage you and assure you that what you are experiencing right now is truly part of God's grace for you. Stand firm in this grace. And so he ends his letter by saying this in verse 13 and 14. He says, your sister church here in Babylon, we'll talk about that a little bit later. It seems kind of a little weird. Your sister church here in Babylon sends you greetings, and so does my son Mark. All right, remember that name as well. We'll come back to that. Greet each other with a kiss of love. All right? So when you look at the end of this letter, Peter finishes this letter by giving you and giving us an understanding of why he wrote this. So let's go back to that in verse 12 when he talks about his purpose. He says, he ends his letter and he says, this is my purpose. So if you ever ask Peter, hey, I got a question for you. Why did you write that letter? What really inspired you to write that letter that you wrote 2,000 years ago? Well, this is exactly what he would say. Well, at the end of my letter, it says, my purpose in writing is to encourage you and to assure you that what you are experiencing is truly part of God's grace for you. So stand firm in this grace. So if you're new with us and you haven't read through this letter, maybe the question you might be asking is, so what are they experiencing? And how is that truly part of God's grace for you? Now, oftentimes, and just kind of in our comfortable American culture, when we see phrases like, what you're experiencing is truly God's grace for you, we tend to think, oh, you know what? It must be because I got that new raise at work, or maybe that person that, I really kind of like, I think they like me too. Man, God's grace is really upon me. And all these wonderful, amazing things are happening in my life. That must be what Peter's talking about here. But that's not what Peter's talking about here. See, what they were experiencing as foreigners, as different kind of people, was suffering. They were dealing with some suffering, some really, really, really hard stuff for being different. In fact, it's kind of weird when you look at it in the sense that, hey, what you're experiencing, the suffering that you're experiencing, that's going on in your life? Well, that's truly part of God's grace, his love for you. The suffering that you're going through is part of God's just amazing, incredible love for you, And so stand firm in that love. Now, you may be saying, wait a minute, that's crazy. That's right. It's holy. It's different. It's weird. It's the way God operates. He operates in a completely different foreign sense. And the more, though, that we understand how this foreign kingdom works, and we begin to understand how God works and kind of go, oh, okay, I always thought this, but now I see why you're doing it that way. Okay, I'm a little bit more on board with that. And the more that we do that, and in fact, actually what happens is this world becomes more foreign to us. So what is he talking about? How can this be? Well, Peter talks about this a little bit earlier in his letter back in chapter 4. So in 1 Peter 4:1, so then, since Christ suffered physical pain, you must arm yourselves with the same attitude he had and be ready to suffer. All right? That probably doesn't get you all super excited, does it? Until you begin to really reflect on what Peter is really talking about. Do you know why Jesus Christ suffered? Because he loves you. He loves you. He's willing to suffer all day long if it means having a relationship with you forever. Okay? Oftentimes when we think about Jesus' sacrifice, we think, oh, sacrifice. Oh, it's so horrible. He wants to sacrifice. But man, when you connect with the understanding of what love is, love basically says, I love you so much that I'm willing to do whatever it takes. It means for you to find wholeness, to find peace, to find reconciliation with God, to be able to have eternal life, to be able to have this relationship with each other. I'm willing to do whatever it takes. It's exactly what pretty much what Jesus said when it came down to him giving up his life for you and I. So when it talks about having the same attitude, it's not having the attitude of suffering. It's having the attitude of love, the love for other people, for love for the people in our family, people in our community, people at work. And it even means loving people irregardless of how they treat you and love them irregardless of whether they love you back or not. Because it's exactly what Jesus has done for us. He first loved us. That's why we love. He didn't wait around for us to get our act together. He took the initiative to mend the relationship that we broke. And so what Peter is finishing up this, you know, when he's talking about this in his letter, he's basically saying to the foreign people, these weird holy people, what makes you so weird and makes you so holy and makes you foreign to the world is that you go and you'll love people no matter whether they love you or not, because it's the way of Christ. So arm yourselves with the same kind of love that Christ has loved you. It says, for if you have suffered physically for Christ, you have finished with sin. Now you say, well, wait a minute, that's kind of a head scratcher there, you know? If I physically suffer for Christ, you've finished with sin. What does he mean by that? Well, before I kind of get to the answer to that, Peter's not alone in thinking this way. In fact, James also wrote a letter, and James writes pretty much the same kind of idea and thoughts that Peter had here. So in James chapter 1, verse 2, James starts with his letter, and he says this, dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity. That's a holy way of thinking. It's a different way of thinking. It's a foreign way of thinking. That trials are an opportunity for what? For great joy? That's crazy. So James says, well, let me explain it a little bit more. And he goes in verse 3, he says, for you know that when your faith, when you trust God, this is when you deal with something different, right? Especially for the first time, whether it's a different relationship, different concept of thinking, there has to be a moment of faith or trust, okay? Where you have to kind of step out and to see whether this person is trustworthy or whether this view or understanding of things is really true, all right? We all do this. So what James is basically saying here is that when your faith is tested, and it will be tested through difficult things of this world, whether you will continue to trust God or whether you will continue to trust God in the sense of learning from him in this difficult situation, is that when your faith is tested, your endurance, and as you begin to say, okay, God, I begin to understand what you're doing, why you're doing this, and I understand your ultimate goal of eternity and what you're doing, it begins to grow endurance within us, that we then become people who are stronger, that we begin to our hearts become stronger. Our hearts aren't mushy where anything hard comes from somebody else. We either skirt away or we pummel somebody else back. We have a different kind of heart. It's a foreign heart. It's a holy heart by which you love in a strong way that has endurance. Okay, so let it grow. When your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect and complete, needing nothing. So the suffering, the difficulties that go in your life is ultimately get to you to a place where you are so free, you don't need anything. You don't need the thoughts and opinions of other people because you already have the love of God. You don't need all the things that you think will make you happy, bigger house, more, you know, more money, faster cars and all of that, because and if you don't have them, you're okay. You know why? Because you have everything that you already need, which is a relationship with a God who loves you and a community of people to do life with. At the very core, that's everything that you need. But here's the deal, I think what James and Peter are both saying when it comes to being different. Being different is hard. Why? Because we as sinners, all of us people, we have a propensity to shun people who are different from us. We have, you know, we have this propensity to make fun of people who are different from us, who look different from us, who like different kind of music than us. We tend to be combative to people who have different ideas and thoughts than us. That's normal. That's the way of this world. But what Peter and James are saying is that as different kind of people, you don't love like that. You love people because you just love them, because it's the way that Christ has called you to, and it's the way that you've been loved by a God. So it's a different way. And when you go and you love other people, okay, and you love them, that's the most freeing thing that could ever happen to you. Now let me think about it this way. If somebody's done you wrong, if somebody's hurt you in this world, we naturally just kind of cling on to that. And we harbor bitterness and anger towards that individual. And we'll hold on to it until that person says, I'm sorry, and gives us exactly what we believe we need from that person in order to release them of that bitterness and anger or whatever. But what happens if they never say, I'm sorry? What happens if they never reconcile with you? What do? You harbor that bitterness and you chain to that for the rest of your life. And you're around them, if you think about them, all negativity, all these things, junk. But what it means to love like this and to understand and to abide into the love of God means now you can go and freely love other people. You are in the sweet spot when somebody may be mean to you or say something to you, and weirdly enough and strangely enough and foreign enough, you kind of go, man, that was really mean, that was kind of ugly, but you know what? I still love them. I still care deeply about them. Jesus was the most free person who ever lived in humanity, because as he was getting his flesh pounded into wood, he said, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. He loved them. There was no bitterness. There was no anger. To the guys who ditched him and ran away when he was arrested, when he needed them the most, he died for them because he loved them. You can't get more freeing than that. There's an amazing, beautiful thing to be able to say, yeah, they did me wrong. That's reality. That's true. What they did was they shouldn't have done that. That's true. But there's a weirdness inside of me that desires for them to be able to come to a place of freedom in their own life that is shackled by the sin that's going on in their life, by which they can experience the grace and love of Jesus Christ. That's when you begin to go, I don't need anything. I don't need somebody to say I'm sorry for me to feel a sense of freedom. I don't need all the trappings of this world to have contentment and joy. I don't need any of that because I already have everything that I already need in Christ Jesus, his love for me and the promises of eternal life with him. That's what he's talking about. That's why Paul can say from prison, rejoice in the Lord always. Do not be anxious for anything, because he learned this understanding of his freedom and his joy in his life. There is nothing in this world that can shackle it unless he gives the choice to it, because he's been freed by God to live for a greater love, a greater purpose, and a greater eternity for his ultimate home. So as he lives and as we live our lives here on this planet, we are foreign, we are different, we are holy. Okay? So going on with this letter that Peter wrote, it's really interesting. So he mentions these two guys' names. So let's go back to these two guys' names that he mentions at the end of his letter here in 1 Peter chapter 5, 12 and 13. All right, I have written and sent this short letter to you with the help of a guy named Silas. All right, so what does that mean? That means probably Peter wrote this letter, and after he wrote it, or Silas wrote it as Peter dictated, Silas was the guy who took this letter and he took it to all the people of all these different regions that we talked about before. So he's kind of the messenger here. And then he mentions another guy here as he goes on. He says, your sister church here in Babylon sends you greetings, and so does my son Mark. It's very interesting that at the end of this letter, these are the only two guys that he mentions, because these two guys have a kind of an interesting history together. If you go back probably about 15 years before Peter wrote this letter, and about 10 years after Jesus rose from the dead, there was two really prominent leaders in the early church, a guy named Paul and another gentleman by the name of Barnabas, that God basically said to these two guys, I want you to go out, I want you to go tell everybody about this amazing thing that happened in Jerusalem with the death, burial, and resurrection of my son, and tell them the implications of that and how it just revolutionizes and changes everything. And so the two guys, you know, the church laid their hands on them and they said, all right, let's go. And then they said, hey, we're going to take somebody with us. We're going to take somebody who's going to help us and be an assistant in this incredible, important work of salvation of the world. We're going to take John Mark, or specifically here, this guy named Mark. So they go out, they leave, they come to the shores of modern day Turkey, the same place where Peter wrote this letter, some, you know, 15 years later or so. And when they get to the shores of Turkey, they've already had some kind of issues on their journey, but God's been good. God's been doing incredible stuff and people's lives are changing. But when they get to Turkey, John Mark kind of looks around and kind of goes, this is too much for me. The persecution, the suffering, or the hardship of this is way too much. And so he gets on a boat and he goes back to Mama, back to Jerusalem. And Paul and Barnabas continue on in their journey. Well, they go, and they did. They dealt with some hard knocks. They got, you know, beaten and thrown stones at them and all that. But God worked in incredible ways. People's lives were changing. People were beginning to experience the love of God. They come back after their missionary journey, and they just tell everybody about all the incredible things that God did on that journey. So some time went by, and Paul and Barnabas kind of got together and said, you know what? Let's go back. We need to go check in on all these churches that we planted and check in with all these people to see how they're doing. Hopefully that they're continuing following the Lord. And so we pick this up in Acts chapter 15, verse 36. Acts is just a book that was written by a guy named Luke to give kind of a history of the early church. And so he gives us some of these incidents here. But so after some time, after Paul and Barnabas went on their first missionary tour, they got together and they said, hey, let's go back and visit each city where we previously preached the word of the Lord to see how the new believers are doing. So verse 37 goes on and he says, Barnabas agreed, said, Paul, that's a great idea. Let's go do that. And Barnabas goes, hey, how about we do this? Let's take John Mark with us again. Okay. Let's give him another shot. Let's bring him along and, you know, continue to develop him, help him to grow in his relationship with the Lord and also in ministry. And so let's bring him. It's very, very common for a guy named Barnabas to do that, because Barnabas is really a nickname. It's not his real name. His real name is Joseph, but people call him Barnabas. It's two Hebrew words put together, Bar-Nabas, which means Bar means son of, Nabas means encouragement. In fact, he was the guy that when Paul became a believer, nobody wanted to be around Paul. Because if you don't know Paul's story, his story was he was basically a terrorist. He had Christians killed. He had them thrown in prison, lose their jobs. He made every Christian as he possibly can their lives incredibly miserable. And then he found Christ. His life was totally changed. But people weren't quite convinced at first. It was the son of encouragement who went to other people, Barnabas, who went to other people and said, he's legit. God's work in him is a miracle. This guy who used to try to kill us is now on God's side, saving other people and telling people that he was completely wrong, that Jesus Christ really did raise from the dead. So no doubt that he would be the person who would say, let's give Mark a second shot. But Paul had he disagreed with that. Paul's probably understanding of it, being the type A guy, is probably, man, this is important work. We don't have time. We can't sit there and develop somebody through this, especially if they turn tail on us. We need a stable, strong assistant, because we're going to be dealing with a lot of suffering, difficulties, and hardships, and going around the world to tell the world that there's something different, someone different who died and rose from the dead, and we need somebody to come alongside of us. So anyways, there was a disagreement about that, And it was so sharp that they separated. They decided to go their own different ways. Barnabas stayed with John Mark and sailed to Cyprus, which is an island there in the Mediterranean. And Paul chose another guy. He chose Silas. All right. So this is where these two guys kind of converged before, you know, way before Peter wrote his letter. That one guy was the one that Paul didn't want to take because he thought he would just bail on him. And the other guy was already a well-known, established church leader, a strong man of faith, that Paul takes him and goes on. Now, one thing about Paul and Silas that we will find from their journey is they will meet a lot of hardship as well. And they will meet even some persecution. In fact, they came to this city in kind of the north side of modern-day Greece called Philippi. It's still there. You can look it up. And when they got there, they got pummeled. They got beaten. They got thrown into prison. Okay, so these guys know what it's like to suffer. But it's interesting how they chose to deal with the suffering of just going and loving and serving other people, just hoping that they would come to eternal salvation in Jesus Christ. Well, when they got into prison, you know what they did? They decided, you know what? After being beaten, after being thrown in prison for the glory of God, they sing songs of praise to God. In Acts chapter 16, verse 25, he goes, around midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God. And you know what? What did it do? It made the prisoners go, what in the world is that? That's different. That's holy. That's foreign. You know, you don't go to prison and start singing praise songs. And if these prisoners, they probably didn't know, but if these prisoners knew what these guys went through for God, they would probably be sitting there going, why in the world are you praising God? Because if there's anybody who could just complain, like, oh God, why are you allowing this to happen in my life? All this suffering, all this beating, this physical pain, and the shunning of people and people looking down at us and spitting at us. We're doing it all for your glory, and this is what we get for it? It would be these two guys. But they saw suffering and trials as an opportunity for joy, because they saw within it something very differently than just self-preservation. They saw an opportunity to go and love others and love those who persecuted them. And also they saw it as an opportunity to reflect Christ's suffering, that Christ suffered for them. And so they praise God for being able to do his good work for them. And so we also see right after this, they get out of prison, and the jailer who was, you know, protecting them in jail, making sure they're in jail, he gives his life to Christ. His whole family's life is changed for all eternity, and God begins to work in a mighty way. Paul later on writes a letter back to this church of Philippi and probably to this jailer and to the rest of the people there. And he said, rejoice in the Lord always. Rejoice, because you live for something different. You live for something greater than for the things of this world. Well, that's Silas. So Silas was just, man, he was just a stud follower of God, strong in the Lord, willing to suffer just with Paul. And then there's the other guy. What about Mark? What happened to him? What happened with him and Barnabas? We don't really necessarily know. We don't have a lot of information about what happened to them. But we get a little piece of history to see a little bit into the window of Mark's life after that moment. So he takes off somewhere along the line, and he goes off with Barnabas, and they continue on the work of the Lord. But I love the way that God works. One of the things about being foreigner and being different is we are to enter into suffering. And sometimes suffering is at the hands of a relationship with another person. And sometimes they ding us, or we ding them, we hurt them. There's some schism and something happens by which they go their way and you go your way. And there's a part of the flesh that just wants to keep it that way. But what we see that God is always working within us is working within us in order to even step into kind of the suffering and the weirdness and awkwardness of a broken relationship. I don't know how that happened. I don't know when it happened or where it happened, but we do know that this relationship between Mark and Paul became intimate once again. And somewhere along the line, they had to have those awkward conversations. There must have been a time when they had to deal with some of those disagreements and where Paul was saying, I don't think you were right at the time and all of that sort of stuff. But they mended those relationships. Why did they do that? Because they were holy. That's what holy people do. That's what it means to be different. They were foreign. And so, because they were foreign to the world, because they mended this relationship. In fact, Paul writes a letter to the people of Colossae. And at the end of his letter, he mentions Mark here. And he says, Aristarchus, who is in prison with me, sends you his greetings. And so does who? Mark. Later on, after that whole incident, we see this little window into this letter where Paul says, I'm in prison again. I'm always in prison for the Lord. But guess who's with me? It's Mark. Mark's with me. So Mark, in some way, is entering into the sufferings with Paul here. And so what does he say? He goes on, as you were instructed before, all right? So somehow Paul talked about Mark before, about him. As you were instructed before, make Mark welcome if he comes your way. It's a beautiful piece of just reconciliation. Now, you may feel, I felt this way, where you felt like just shame, you know, for not really being who you really are, a person who really loves Jesus Christ. That maybe you went to Publix and they asked you, hey, what are you doing this weekend? Well, I'm going to go play football, you know, go watch some football. I'm going to go eat with some friends. But you never, ever say, and then on Sunday, I'm going to go and worship, you know, Jesus Christ. It's like, no, we don't, everybody, you know, football is acceptable to everybody. Saying that you're going to worship Jesus, even though that's who you are and what you love, like, well, no, I don't want to enter into that. And sometimes we kind of say, well, it's because I don't want to, you know, put my religion upon them. Well, you put your football on them, you know. You're just being who you are. When you're just who you are, you're not, you know, pressing anything upon anybody to be who you are. Sometimes as Christians, we've really gotten that mixed up. You are called to be free to be who you are. If you love Christ, there's no shame in that. There's no shame in living for a man who died for you because he loves you. It's okay. It's okay to be you, to be a son or a daughter of the Most High King. It's okay to do that and to live within that freedom. But here's the deal. Yeah, you may get some persecution from it. There may be some suffering from it. People may think you're kind of weird. They may think that you're different, and we don't really like different, because the same in our culture is really not to really think about God at all, you know, and just kind of be secular. So we don't want you to be different, just be secular, because everybody, we're all secular here in this world. We're all about this world. And sometimes you may be different in the sense where people may not, you know, invite you to a party or something like that because you live for something different. You live for someone different. And so you may miss out on those things. There's no doubt about that it's going to happen when you follow Jesus Christ with just your open heart to that. Friends may think you're foolish, just as Paul says, hey, you know what? People think we're fools. It's going to happen with that. But then there's a question that we always have to live with. Do we want to live in the slavery of not really being who we are and conforming to the world because we want a sense of comfort? Or do we want to be really free of who we are and to live bold, you know, live with freedom of this is who I am, even if it means, unfortunately, we may lose out on something. But one thing is for certain, that what these guys have said, that even if you may suffer from that, there's one thing that we do not do. We do not shun other people because you know what? That's the way of the world. We're called to be different. Then even though people may think we're foolish, even though we may not be invited to the party, even though they may even say some ugly things about us, we love in return. Why? Because our God first loved us. That's what it means to be holy, to be a foreigner in this world. And so, Peter ends up his letter this way. He says, your sister church here in Babylon sends you greetings, and so does my son Mark. Greet ye each other with a kiss of love. What does he mean by the sister church in Babylon? He's probably just using kind of play on words, where Babylon was a picture of Israel, when Israel was taken out of their country, out of Israel, and were replanted in Babylon, okay, in the country which is modern day Iraq, by which they were called to continue to trust in God while they were foreigners in this place, to live differently rather than of all the other worldly people around them, other kingdoms, to live differently for God. And so he's basically saying, hey, your sister church who's also living in a foreign place like you sends you greetings. In other words, what he's saying here is you're not alone. It's not alone. One of the biggest fears that we have for being different is we feel like different equals being alone, being rejected, being isolated. But that's not God's vision for us at all. We are to be different, but we are to be different together. That we are to be a different people that, you know, and do community differently and live differently. And we are to do that in relationship to each other. So that we can do exactly what Peter did to his writers 2,000 years, to those he wrote 2,000 years ago. to encourage them, to assure them that being different is a blessing, because through that, God makes you stronger, makes your love stronger. And through that, you have a bigger influence and impact in people's lives that can never be matched by anything else in this world. Just look at it. 2,000 years later, here we are in a totally different place, giving honor to a God who loved us, who could have just obliterated us out of his own perfect righteous anger, but he didn't. He chose a different way to love us. And yours and my life is changed forever. That's what he's called us to be and called us to do, to be different. And he says here, greet each other with a kiss of love. We're not going to do that only because it's COVID, but if it wasn't, we would do that. What he's saying here is he's saying greet each other. Care for each other, love for each other, do life together. Encourage each other to be different, because not only do you need to be different, this world needs different. This world is desperately wanting different. They're looking for unity. They're looking for family. They're looking for love. They're looking for something better, a better path than the path that the world is on, that we're on. And we have that with us. So as I just said, in our time, I want us to just think about, as we end our time with this letter, is to reflect upon it. I encourage you guys to go back and reread this letter, because I think it would be really helpful and revolutionary to your mind and to your life. That being holy, being different, being foreign is a beautiful, wonderful thing. Yeah, sometimes it can be hard and it can be difficult, but it's through that sacrifice that love comes to the top. People's lives begin to change, and the world is forever changed. Would you pray with me? Father, I thank you so much for the examples of those who have gone before us. Those who put enough trust in you and the craziness of you to step into situations that were hard and difficult, where they met persecution, they met suffering. But God, they saw through that how their lives had been changed through your suffering in their life. And they also experienced through their suffering the changed lives of those around them. And here we are 2,000 years later, God. God, we confess to you that we are people who really don't like suffering. And we recognize that even your son didn't like suffering when he came to you and said, Father, may this cup be passed for me. But not my will, but your will be done, because he trusted in your good plan. And so do we, God. So Father, make us different. Make us stronger. Make our hearts stronger, and stronger for those who have hurt us, stronger for the people around us, stronger for humanity. And let us be a different way and different people in this world, God. And Father, as we sing this song, remind us that even though we may even feel absolutely alone in being this different, you are with us, and that we are never alone, that you love us, that you promised us that you'll never leave us nor forsake us. There's nothing that can separate us from your love, God. And so, Father, as we end our time, we end it with a heart and a posture of love and worship to you, as we say to you, we love you. It's in your son's name I pray. Amen.